This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 80 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hey, David. Here we are again. Another week, another episode, up to number 80. Amazing as that seems.
Yeah, it's hard to believe this little show of ours has taken off the way it has.
And we're getting lots of feedback, so much listener feedback. You know, it's hard to keep up with all of it, but we should mention again, and we always say this, but to our listeners, we do read everything. We don't have the opportunity to respond to everything. Just the volume is so huge, but we really appreciate the fantastic participation we have from our listeners.
It brings a smile to, I mean, I'll speak for myself, but it's such positive feedback. I mean, our listeners are great, and the fact that they want to participate is even better. So we should get started. We got a dense show tonight. We'll start talking about lattice work, firefighting drones on ships, and rescue drones that bounce off walls, DJI rolling back their no-fly firmware update, waiting tables in Singapore, otherwise known as the Singapore Sling, a DIY no-fly zone, and some other stories, as well as some videos of the week. We don't have an official video of the week, but I think one of our stories has quite a few entertaining videos that we'll use that as our inadvertent listener video of the week. And we are going to touch base on some fantastic listener mail. Well, our first story from tonight was in AviationToday.com. Precision Hawk announces UAV tracking and avoidance system, commonly known as LATAS, or L-A-T-A-S.
Yeah, and that stands for Low Altitude Tracking and Avoidance System. Precision Hawk has released this. This is an automatic traffic control system for UAVs. They hope that this is something that will sort of aid in the integration of UAVs into the national airspace, the NAS. And this is kind of an interesting approach. It uses the cellular networks to provide flight planning, tracking, and avoidance for UAVs.
And it uses cellular networks with speeds as low as 2G, You know, which is really kind of amazing considering everybody else on our phones, we want 4G, and we hit 3G and we start complaining. So they're definitely thinking about the limitations of cellular, but it does provide real-time flight data transmission. And it's, of course, really small. It's about 110 grams currently, and it's in a small 3x2x1 inch box, which is really optimal. We've talked about these collision avoidance systems and such, and the most important aspect of it is miniaturization to get it on these smaller UAVs.
Now, Precision Hawk says that this is still being developed, and that utilizing it can be either plug and play or during the manufacturing process, it could be integrated into the UAV's circuits. And we have an interesting quote from, this is from Tyler Collins. He's the director of business development at Precision Hawk, and he's also the Lattice creator. He says, "The development of Lattice is based around the idea that we can use existing technologies at a low cost and weight and avoid the creation of an entire new system." Well, that sounds good. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, off the shelf is always better than creating from scratch. It looks like they've achieved the miniaturization, which I know has been a problem for a lot of other systems. And Global Hawk also told us, We are in full testing at this time and plan to roll it out as part of a whole traffic management system later this year. We're working on some big partners we'll be announcing over the next few months. And the solution is patent pending, but you know, it would be kind of neat that, you know, these DJI Phantoms and come built with Lattice in, because that's one of the ways. So we'll have to keep following it up with our friends at Precision Hawk on this. And once they get a real release and get working with the FAA, we'll be able to broadcast it for everybody. So let's move over to our next story, which is from gizmag.com. Microflyer drone could help a robot fight fires on ships. This is actually from one of our listeners, Peter, in Canada. The U.S. Office of Naval Research, or the ONR, conducted a demonstration of its shipboard autonomous firefighting robot, Saphir, along with an autonomous quadcopter drone aboard a decommissioned USS Shadwell in Alabama.
And this is kind of interesting. I mean, the application is fires on naval vessels, which, as you could imagine, is a pretty difficult environment. I can visualize dark hallways deep in the ship filled with smoke, trying to locate and take care of fires down there. So this is an interesting combination between the robot and the drone. And this is sort of another example, David, of something we've seen in several other applications where you might have a main machine or something of that sort, in this case a robot, that's paired up with a multi-rotor or some kind of a drone that can provide intelligence information to sort of that main machine. So this is a pretty clever approach.
These are small. The drone was 23 inches wide and flown through the ship's 26-inch wide hatches. It did require small propellers, which reduced the efficiency, which limited the flight time to 5 minutes. So they do have some bugs to work out. But what happened was the drone would fly ahead of the robot, and the robot could direct where the fire could be put out. And the microflyer, as they call it, had a forward-looking infrared to find the fires, a downward-facing optical camera to monitor drone units relative to the floor, and a depth sensing camera for mapping the locations of the fire. So it's being like a fire bomber spotter. You know, you fly in advance and, okay, this is your drop target, go here. So pretty neat technology.
Yeah, and this microflyer, as they're calling it, as you said, David, is a quadcopter. It comes from the Carnegie Mellon University Robotics Institute and also Sensible Machines. Carnegie Mellon, of course, has been working robotics and autonomous vehicles for, I think decades. These folks have been working this for a long, long time, have a lot of expertise in this field, very qualified to be involved in this kind of research. So, again, another exciting application.
And sticking with the rescue theme, this was also from Gizmodo. And if you aren't on their daily mailing list, folks, Gizmodo is pretty good. It's got a lot of interesting stuff. But this was actually from one of our listeners, Neil. The spherical rescue drone is straight out of Star Wars. Now, you had me at Star Wars. Anybody who knows me knows that the word Star Wars attached to anything will make me pay attention. And this is the world's first collision-proof drone. And I believe, Max, we've talked about this in the past. I went trying to hunt it down in the episodes, but now we've got 80 episodes. I don't know how that happened. But it's kind of hard to track down these stories. But I think we did talk about, and this was built by Flyability.
That's right. And I think the video we had seen, maybe it was a year ago, was of this spherical gimbal flying through a forest. And what it does is it bounces off trees. It knows a direction that it wants to go in. And when it runs into something, it sort of bounces off and then is redirected, but still heads in the desired direction. So as a search and rescue drone, it's got some interesting possibilities. It has a coaxial twin rotor design, and that's inside this this carbon fiber frame, sort of a rotating protective frame that prevents damage to the, you know, the important parts inside. But the carbon fiber frame, the very light frame, can absorb the impacts. And again, one of the ideas for this is to use it in things like building fires. And we also know that they recently took first place in a contest.
The Drones for Good competition.
That's right.
That was right out of our playbook. We've always wanted to talk about this. And they won a cash prize of $1 million U.S. So pretty impressive. And that would be that's a good amount of money to do additional development for the project. So I guess another one we'll have to follow through over time to see what they come up with. But it's kind of a neat technology, you know, where I mean, personally, I kind of wish I had the technology. It would help me fly my little quadcopter around the house better because I seem to bounce it off more walls than anything else. But that's just me.
Now, we have another example of technology here, but maybe this example didn't turn out quite so well, at least not in the first go-around, did it?
No, we reported, what, 2 weeks ago? Two or three weeks ago, back that because of the White House incursion, we know it, we would also like to know it as don't go drunk and flying, DJI was going to implement a firmware update that had what they were calling their White House update, which was providing quite a few automatic no-fly zones built into their firmware, and it was going to be a required update. Now, you didn't have to take the update, but you'd never be able to get the follow-on updates. But evidently, DJI, I think, while well-intentioned, sort of put it out a little too quickly because there's been some bugs.
They say that they received, they call it a small number, we don't know how many, but some number of reports from users who did do the firmware update, and there were issues with the internal measurement unit, the IMU. This, of course, was for the latest upgrade for the Phantom, and they say that the system, it senses when this IMU isn't calibrated, and then it locks the Phantom from turning on its motors. So some people have been reporting this problem. DJI rolled it back, and so Phantom owners would plug in and then discover that their Phantoms were rolled back to the previous firmware version. So yeah, maybe... Well, it's hard to say exactly what happened. If you have software that has bugs, you can always point to maybe insufficient testing. Or you know, they did come out with this firmware upgrade really quickly after that White House drone crash. And maybe they just pushed it out a little too quickly.
They were trying to do the right thing, and sometimes you need to take a step back and, you know,
get
speed
it right.
Is not necessarily get it right. And this was causing some flyaway, so it's not helping, wasn't really helping the matter. The situation, reading some of the reports I saw online, is it was doing some really nasty things to some quadcopters. So good for DJI that, you know, okay, we screwed up, we're going to roll it back and we'll get it right. And I still give them for credit for trying to get it. The thought out there was right, you know, and I hope they do eventually get the firmware correct, and so that we won't have these problems and people will be flying them safely. So we don't have a weekly You're Grounded report.
And I'm sure they will. But one thing that's impressive to me is that DJI has this firmware upgrade process that seems to be you know, really well developed in terms of, you know, getting upgrades out there. And in this case, when they have to undo it, getting the reversal out up there is as well. I like the fact that it's such an easy path to do firmware upgrades with DJI. Some of the others maybe are not so easy. And there's certainly other products, sort of electronic products we have where you can do a firmware upgrade, but you have to know about it. You have to perform a number of steps in order to accomplish it. So I like the way DJI has implemented their firmware upgrades.
Which is why I own an Apple. But even they're fallible. But all right, well, I'm hungry. Let's order dinner. Or how about pizza and beer delivered by drones?
In Singapore. In Singapore restaurants, in fact. You know, David, Singapore has got, there's so much great food in Singapore and so many fantastic restaurants. And they've got quite a demand. And staffing is somewhat difficult to come by. And so this company has a solution.
We'll have a human take the order and we'll have the drone deliver the food. The UAV is from Infinium. Hope I'm saying that right. Robotics. Interesting enough, the UAS is capable of carrying 5 pounds, according to the restaurant, which roughly is equivalent to 2 beers and a pizza. The staff will take orders. The drones will deliver the food. Ah, but they are thinking this through. The rotors are completely enclosed to avoid cutting open customers, like our TGI Friday with the photographic drone that landed and cut the person's face open.
Right. And
also, Infinium Robotics says the UAVs have sense and avoid technology. They can avoid missing the other drones that are flying around the restaurant, as well as the ceiling, the floor, and the people. It's kind of interesting to see these things whirling around, though. The one photograph has got a lovely beer perched precariously over on top of this drone. And I, you know, I love waitresses that don't spill a drop, but I just can't imagine that this is really the best way to deliver alcohol, because I don't like alcohol abuse, and you know, spilling it is just
spilling it is wasteful, right? Well, this company providing this Infinium Robotics, they really only have a couple of products. This is one of them. They're a Singapore-based company. I also see that they have an address in Fremont, California. I don't know if that's just a mail drop or if they have actual offices there, not sure. But they talk about the drone offering a fast delivery speed. It saves space, maximizes sales per square foot. Also, it uses the space between the ceiling and above human height to deliver the food and drinks. It adapts to the restaurant's unique layout. They also claim it's simple to deploy. It's a plug-and-play system. It's fully autonomous. So obviously in the United States, well, there are some issues at this point in time, but it'll be interesting to see what happens in the restaurants in Singapore and see how many take advantage of this this technology, how many employ it, and what kind of results they have. Hopefully everyone stays safe.
I did find interesting was that evidently Singapore has now eliminated most of their migrant workforce that would be doing the serving. And there's a class structure issue also. And this is slightly off topic, but I did find it interesting that whereas us Americans here all expect to go to McDonald's to learn how to flip hamburgers. In my case, it was stuffing tacos at Taco Bell. But we've all had that experience of doing the fast food and waiting tables thing. Well, evidently, there's a cultural issue that people do not want to be the stigma of being a server in Singapore. So they really have a shortage of people. So this is not necessarily a luxury, but is really a necessity to some of these restaurants.
Fascinating.
Well, let's talk about wild ideas for the dronophobes among us.
Ah, privacy issues.
A do-it-yourself no-fly zone. This was from TechCrunch.com. No-fly zone, and that's the name of the company, nofflyzone.org, lets you establish a no-fly zone over your property.
Apparently what you do is you register your property. And you're allowed to register one property, although I guess if you can convince them that you own multiple locations, you could register them. But generally, you can register one property, and that creates this geofence around your home. Well, obviously, the drone manufacturers have to be part of this as well in order to implement it. And some of them really have signed up.
Yeah, drone deploy, YUNEEC, Hexo Plus, Pixie Pass, and RC Fly Maps, and eHang, which makes the Ghost, as well as Horizon Hobby, all have signed up with No Fly Zone that says that we'll have firmware updates to their drones that will honor these no fly zones. Now, if you notice, the big names aren't part of this yet, like DJI, but the no fly zone says, you know, the DJI is very sensitive to no fly zones and they're sort of expecting them to climb aboard. So love to find out if any of our listeners are going to install a no fly zone over their own home. I'm in a no fly zone because I'm within a mile of an airport, but, we've already shipped this off to our resident airplane geek dronophobe. So, I'm sure that his is already set up in Chicago.
You're speaking of Rob. You know, I don't know how many Robs are out there, how many dronophobes are out there. If this proves to be effective, I'm curious to see how many people, you know, sign up. Obviously, there'd have to be some kind of publicity or promotion, but if it is effective, and if some of the, you know, major outlets, news outlets, so forth, pick this up and really generate some broad awareness, I don't know, you could see tens of thousands of people or more signing up, because why not? I mean, why would you want to have drones fly over your house if you can just, you know?
I like drones.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, people fly so irresponsibly.
But that's why we do this show. We need to find those people and we need to train them to fly responsibly. I mean, we need to make sure that people know what to do and what not to do. I mean, that's one of our goals. While I encourage No Fly Zone to help people, what I don't encourage is what Oklahoma has put it into.
This is the extreme, isn't it?
I like the passive-aggressive no-fly zone, but according to TulsaWorld.com, an Oklahoma bill would allow property owners to shoot down drones without civil liability. Now, we've had this conversation in the past, and the FAA has come out and said, a drone is an aircraft, and you shouldn't be taking pot shots at aircraft, no matter how evasive it is, but evidently, the bad guys are using drones for not so good in Oklahoma, and this is a way they want to even the score.
They say that cattle thieves are using drones to scope out herds of cattle and, you know, facilitate the illegal process of stealing cattle. And so the Oklahoma State Judiciary Committee has passed this Senate bill that gives the property owners the right to take action without fear of, what, David, getting sued by the cattle thieves for shooting down their drones? That just seems so ridiculous. I mean,
but, you know, that's the way these things work, unfortunately. How many times have you heard, you know, somebody, you know, there's been some guy breaking into somebody's house and they ended up suing the homeowner because they got stuck in the window or something, you know? I get the logic, but, you know, let's say that we here at the UAV Digest do not recommend trying to shoot down the unmanned aerial vehicle that's stalking your cattle or any unmanned vehicle. There's got to be a better way to do it. But we'll see if Oklahoma puts through this. I mean, it's just the Judiciary Committee that's come up with it. We'll see if it actually goes before the Senate and if the governor of Oklahoma will sign it into law.
I'm hopeful that more intelligent heads will prevail and that this won't go too far.
The next story was from our friend Bill, and that's Qualcomm buys aerial drone startup with advanced control technology. And it's nice to know that it's a local to me, this company.
Qualcomm is local to you?
No, but the company that got purchased is.
Ah, and that's K-Mail Robotics.
But Bill wrote to us, you may not know Qualcomm, but you likely have their chips in their phone or other devices. They're a big player in that market, and this looks like it's like a view to a long-term strategic play to be involved in this market segment in a significant way.
Yeah, it sure does. Qualcomm, of course, is a giant chip maker And they've been buying up some companies, including KML Robotics, and they specialize in multi-rotor drones. Now, there isn't a whole lot of information. In fact, there's almost no information in terms of what Qualcomm intends to do with KML Robotics. In fact, they've been asked that question, and they just send people to the KMLRobotics.com website. That's KMELRobotics.com. And all it says is KML Robotics is proud to announce its acquisition by Qualcomm Technologies on February 2nd, 2015. We are extremely excited to become part of the Qualcomm team and look forward to bringing aerial robotics to the next level together. That's it. We do know about a few things that KML Robotics has done in the past. In fact, there's some really fantastic YouTube videos that show flight coordination.
Right, and that's what their big thing is, which is the multi-copters interacting together and flying in formation and stuff. Like the Flying Robot Dance and the Flying Robot Rock Stars, where the hexacopters are actually playing music. And another one is a video for Lexus Automobiles called Amazing in Motion. So those will be our video of the week. You agree there, Max?
Yeah, we'll put links to those videos in the show notes. And you can enjoy some really amazing examples of coordination of multiple multi-rotors.
Well, this last story was sort of breaking news today, and this was from the IEEE.org, their Spectrum newsletter. California to ban drone flights under 400 feet.
Under? You don't mean over.
No, I mean under. The logic being is, flights over 400 feet fall into the NAS, otherwise known as the National Airspace, and is the purveyance of the FAA.
Right.
So if we deal with flights under 400 feet, the state of California wants to regulate the, quote, operation of an unmanned vehicle below the navigable airspace overlaying the property. So if you are under 400 feet and you fly over somebody's property, you're in trouble and you're going to get, I don't know. They didn't go into what the ramifications were, who's going to enforce it, but they're basically trying to make it California a no-fly zone in its entirety.
Well, that's not good.
No, I don't know how to think this over other than it's a typical California kind of law. And it's not just limiting, you know, drones with cameras. It's saying no flying. So I don't know. I mean, does that mean if I fly my little quadcopter in my house, that means I'm still being going to be busted by the law? This is one of those regulations where you sort of wonder, okay, you're really opening it up to a Saturday afternoon in a park somewhere. It's not private air. It's not private airspace, but so, I mean, and then when does a UAV become a radio controlled airplane? You know, your friend is flying a radio controlled airplane under 400 feet line of sight, typical American Academy model aeronautics flight. And the net result is the police come over and say, you need to land your drone and you're going to get a fine. So I guess we'll keep an eye on this one, but this is one of those, let's overreact and let's think this through before we put through a state bill, which is State Bill 142. So anybody out in California, if you can get any more information about this, we'd greatly appreciate it.
All right, David, how about some listener feedback?
I'll let you take the first one.
This comes in from Mark. He's talking about UAS exemptions. He notes that we're in uncharted territory. He says we're pursuing opportunities for including qualified PICs to fly commercially according to our exemption.
Mark actually was responding to our discussion last week about Burns Eye View, who he is the owner, and they're looking to expand from their authorization in California out to other states. So he responded back to us, and we're working to see if we can get him on the show. And he's looking for qualified pilots. One of the things he says in it is, he recommends that all UAS pilots who hope to fly someday commercially begin logging their flight time in minutes, log performed maintenance on the various platforms they use, and they should develop an attitude of how they can document their skills in a professional manner for qualified as a PIC. Max, we need to make a logbook for UAV pilots.
And as Mark says, and I think we've touched on this before in the past too, that this is an important thing to be doing, to start accumulating this logbook, this kind of logbook data, because almost certainly when the FAA NPRM comes out, there's going to be some kind of requirements for some type of pilot qualification or certification. And, you know, if you look at how it works in the manned world, you have logbooks that document all this experience. Almost certainly it's going to be the same for drone pilots.
And note, he also said, not only are you maintaining a logbook about your flight experience, you're also providing a logbook on the maintenance of your vehicle, your UAS, which is equally important. Folks, if you want to just start out with an Excel spreadsheet. It's really not hard. The day you flew, what the weather was, what did you fly, how long did you fly it, and any notes. And you'll discover that you'll want to add stuff later on, but any sort of log like that is the way to go. And we encourage that. We definitely encourage that. And we got another email from one of our former guests. This was Don Toporowski.
He's been working hard to create this ACE Center for UAV Research, and this is associated with the University of Ontario's Institute of Technology. We'll have a link in the show notes that shows some the news broadcast on this topic. And what he's done is taken this facility that was originally built for automotive testing, and it's no longer going to be used for that. They've done some work to establish this Center for UAV Research that utilizes the facilities. And that includes things like, I don't know what the technical term for it is, but you know, rooms where, like wind tunnels, or rooms where you can create different weather conditions.
Climate control chambers.
There you go. Climate control chambers. Thanks, David.
And you know, and I'm the historian. You're the general. You're the engineer. Okay, come on.
Sorry, I let you down. Well, this kind of fits some requirements we've sort of touched on in the past from time to time, is you know, what happens with drone flights in bad weather conditions and how susceptible are they, that kind of thing. And there's probably huge opportunities or the need for testing in order to learn these kinds of parameters. So Don has got this facility going, which will enable that kind of testing to take place. Don tells us that they're working to build a website and, you know, other things like that that will help people learn more about this facility. And we'll pass those along to you when we have them.
And he was very appreciative to all of the feedback he got from our listeners. And I got to say, we've got the best audience, Max. We really do. We probably don't say that to you guys enough, but you guys really, we really do appreciate everything you do for us to make us look good. But the next one is from one of our co-hosts from Airplane Geeks. Given all the depressing news about no-fly zones and flying under 400 feet, this is a good way to end the show. A little, since we didn't have any... Max, I just realized something.
What's that, David?
It was a week without an exemption.
Oh, man.
We have gone a whole week without the FAA exempting somebody.
Wow. Are we sure? I'll have to check the website, the FAA's website. But this came from Max Trescott. And he passed along a Washington Post article titled, "Want to Fly Your Drone and Make a Quick Buck? The FAA has 33 rules for you." And this sort of, you know, lists out the constraints, the stipulations that the FAA has placed on this exemption. They run the gamut from things that, well, that make a lot of sense to things that you kind of wonder about and why that needs to be in the exemption.
But Max had a spin on it.
He did, didn't he?
This was kind of fun. If you know about the song 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, well, Max did a spoof of the FAA 33 rules for flying a drone. He started with four, so that gives us 29 more for maybe our listeners to send us. Number one was, drones can only be operated by a teenager with at least 12 years' experience in video games.
That's probably a good one, actually. Number two, all persons within 2 miles of the flight zone must be notified of the drone flight at least 5 business days in advance.
Number three, all maintenance on the drone must be performed by an FAA-certified A&P mechanic.
If that's in the NPRM, I'm going to choke myself. And then number four, all maintenance performed on the drone must be entered into the maintenance logbook and signed by a certified mechanic.
So there you go. There's four. We've got 29 more. Maybe our listeners can come up with some additional ones. You can send that, of course, to feedback@theUAVDigest. We'll be good. We won't give you Max's email address so he can get bombarded. But we'll forward any additional ones you send to him on to us. With that, Max, I think we've run a little long.
Yeah, this is a wrap for this episode. This is episode 80. We really appreciate you listening to our show here. And you can find us at theuavdigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes, just go to theuavdigest.com/80 for episode 80. And of course, we're on social media as well in several places.
Yeah, you can find us on Twitter @theuavdigest, on Facebook /uavdigest, on Google Plus, theuavdigest. And of course, definitely if you want to reach us and please, again, we get a lot of email. You might not get a response right away, but we do try to answer everybody and definitely know that we read everything. And that's feedback@theuavdigest.com. Now, of course, the best way to let your friends know about us, besides telling them, as we used to say on Airplane Geeks, is leave us a review on iTunes for the UAV Digest. The more stars we have, the more it comes up when someone's looking to find the show where they can learn. And of course, you can stream us to your phone on Stitcher. And we'd like to thank our new patron, Don. And you can make a donation like he did to us at patreon.com/theuavdigest, or go to uavdigest.com and click on the donate link. And last but not least, you could go to our webpage also and find our cafepress.com site so you can buy some swag. And while we don't make any money on it, it would be nice to support UAV Digest by having your friends see your t-shirt. So with that, I think we'll sign off. This is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening, everyone.